Hey, it's Mike Robb. AMC's Hall to Catch Fire is rolling in for a second season, and actress Mackenzie Davis shares what we can expect and exactly what her character is truly all about. Plus, he's been called one of the most original comics on the road today. He's Michael Blackson, the African King of Comedy. And we talk about just that moment in time where he became funny. Let's get to the point.
This is The Point.
AMC's 80s computer drama Halt and Catch Fire is rolling into its second season. I sat down with actress Mackenzie Davis, who plays Cameron Howe in the series, to talk about where things left off and where they're headed this season.
I think we've been dealing with different stuff in the first. So the first season was about the transition of a software company into producing PCs to get into the personal computer market. And the whole arc of the first season was sort of the journey of these three people, Joe McMillan, who's played by Lee Pace, Scoot McNairy's character Gordon, and my character, Cameron Howe, building this computer that they were going to launch on the market. And the first season ended with a more fractured version of that team than we anticipated. And the second season starts with Cameron starting her own sort of proto-internet mail-order games company. And she's taking Gordon's wife, Donna, as her fellow, like, de facto leader, even though she has proclaimed that she wants to have a hierarchy-less company. The second season deals with a lot of figuring out the struggle between the ideals of having this egalitarian, like, meritocracy in her company, and then the reality that you need to have a leader and you need to survive and somebody needs to be the one that people can ask questions of. And that's sort of where we start the second season.
Mackenzie's character, Cameron, has always been a rebel, but this season, even more.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think she's never... I think she's enjoyed the dynamic of somebody she didn't necessarily respect being her boss and being able to rebel against that thing. And now she's in an environment where she is the boss and the only person she'll rebel against is the other people that she works with, alienating them or herself, which would sort of damage the company. And so she is really trying to figure out how to be a human being who is occasionally empathetic and sometimes generous. And just figuring out what it means to be a human to her, because I think she's operated fully under her own rules for a long time.
Another big part of this season is Cameron's relationship with computer program genius turned housewife Donna. So we talked a little bit about that and exactly why the two are attracted to one another.
I honestly think it's just respect. I think that Cameron considers herself the smartest person in any room, and I think she's usually right. And I think Donna is one of the few people that didn't try to, but really earned her respect by being the smartest person in many rooms as well. I don't know. I mean, I think a very important relationship develops between them, but I don't know. I don't think there's many people that Cameron would bow down to in deference. And not to say that she's doing it with Donna, but I think that Donna's a contender, and she saw that from the beginning and wanted her to be part of her company. As far as the sisterhood goes, like, that's not how I would describe their relationship. A little more fraught than that. Well, I guess it's like a damaged thing.
We don't really know a lot about Cameron's background, but that hasn't stopped Mackenzie from building one of her own to make the character that much more interesting.
I think of all the characters, she has the sort of, even Joe, who's close in mystery, is of his past, and there's nothing that's given to the audience about Cameron. So I have done a lot of, imagining for myself where she gets from, and I know the relationships in her life that don't make it onto the screen, and all this sort of stuff that she's dealing with off camera, and the writers have given me lots of clues, and then if something comes up that's not in line with what I've seen for her, just adjust. I think that's the nature of TV, is you're not going to be in control of the entire narrative, and you don't have all the puzzle pieces, and you just try and create things that make sense for this person, so they're grounded with for as long as that path can be their reality until, you'll get a new piece of information and you're like, oh, okay, she grew up in that class. Now we'll deal with that.
As we said, the show is set in the 80s, so I guess that makes it kind of a period piece with some interesting clothing choices and certainly some great music as well. So what drew Mackenzie to this role?
wrestling era specific. It was more just, I really appreciate, she wasn't written as a woman first. She was written as a genius person, as a volatile person, and as a complicated person with a lot of mysteries that I had to figure out about her. But I think both before I started playing the character, and then now that I've played her for two seasons, the issue of Cameron's gender almost never comes up unless she's exposed to a world outside of her own making, and then it's this like stark reminder that that could be the first impression of her rather than her mind. And I just wanted to play a character who wasn't predicated on whether or not she's like was a female.
AMC's Halt and Catch Fire begin new episodes this weekend, Sundays on AMC. And you can catch up on more, including the first season, right now at AMC.com. No big surprise here. Plenty to catch up on in the latest in pop culture. From a simple meme to Facebook to Reddit and, well, now to comics. Dynamite has announced a relationship with Grumpy Cat, publishing a brand new hardcover graphic novel in time for the holiday season, and a new website featuring material that will be called Grumpy Cat Comic Strips. The move to comics seems like a natural one, considering the fact that Grumpy has some pretty big numbers when it comes to the internet. Her Facebook fans run about 7.6 million, and the YouTube video views have topped 31 million. Some box office records were set over the Memorial Day weekend, but not necessarily the good ones. In fact, it was the first time in 20 years that no film topped $40 million in the box office over the long holiday weekend. It was a weak time in the theaters, with Tomorrowland disappointing at only $32 million. And even with the power of Pitch Perfect, Mad Max, and Avengers Age of Ultron, the box office still was weak when compared to last year, or even, as we said, in the past 20 years. Last time ticket sales were this weak over the Memorial Day weekend was 1995. On a positive note, Avengers Age of Ultron crossed the $40 million threshold here in the U.S., the first film to do so since Hunger Games, Catching Fire, and Frozen, and is well on the way to earning, of course, the $1 billion it's expected when you combine it with worldwide ticket sales. It'll be a Bill Murray Christmas, at least on Netflix this year, with something called A Very Murray Christmas. It's an original piece, directed by Sofia Coppola and written by Mitch Glazer, and featuring George Clooney, Amy Poehler, Michael Cera, Chris Rock, and many others as well, all in a story that takes place at Bill Murray's Christmas party. Expected to be released on Netflix in time for the holiday season. FX is back in business with Kurt Sutter. They've given a first season order to his series Bastard Executioner after pilot production wrapped a couple of weeks back. A spokesperson said that the network is proud to get Kurt's work back on the air so soon after the completion of the successful run of Sons of Anarchy. Are you going to OrangeCon? Just ahead of the new season of Orange is the New Black, which premieres on the 12th of June, Netflix has an invitation-only fan event in New York City. Stars of the show and so much more. If you want to get full details, maybe get an invitation too. We've got a video posted for you right now at GetThePointRadio.com. Deadbeat is headed back to Hulu for a third season. There'll be 13 new episodes, again with star Tyler Labine as well. They'll premiere sometime, more than likely the end of this year or early next year as well, on the streaming service. Add one more to the list of reboots. This time it's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Fox is doing a brand new version, which will have no connection to the 2003 film. That film did pretty good, about $178 million worldwide as well. And, of course, the property remains strong in comic book stores with the recent graphic novel Nemo, River of Ghosts, at pretty much the top of the charts as graphic novel sales went over the past couple of months. There was talk of a TV series for Fox, but that apparently has been waylaid for the movie, which more than likely will get fast-tracked by the end of this year. Comedian Michael Blackson has been called one of the most original comics in the country, traveling around the globe entertaining audiences as the African King of Comedy. We talked about his career, especially the early days, and when he actually knew he could be funny.
It was early 90s, actually. I was delivering pizzas at Domino's Pizza, you know, this after high school. In fact, I delivered pizzas during my 11th and 12th grade, you know, at my part-time job. And, you know, I guess at work, I would crack a couple of jokes here and there. You know, mind you, I'm originally from West Africa. you know. And when I first came to America, you know, kids just made fun of me all the time, you know. And then I guess I just, you know, decided to just flip it around with take those things that said about me and make jokes about it. And I remember working at Domino's Pizza in the early 90s. One of my coworkers, he was an acting coach at a nearby community college, and he delivered pizzas part-time. And he just thought I was the funniest guy in the world. He's like, well, there's something about you that's funny, so you should take this to the stage. And then he helped me write my first 5 minutes of material. And I remember going on stage and, you know, trying this out for the first time. You know, did like a five-minute bit, and it went pretty well. People laughed at me. You know, strangers that I didn't know. Usually, you know, you tell jokes among your friends. And when you go in front of people that don't know you and you make them laugh, you know, it's like an adrenaline feeling that you get out of there. So that's pretty much what started it for me. And I started to go to open mic every week and started developing my act. And, you know, years later, here I am. It's a full-time job for me. I make a great living from it. I tour the whole country, the whole world, actually. I perform everywhere from Africa to Europe to the Caribbean and, of course, across the country of the United States. So it's pretty decent. I'm enjoying myself right now.
When it comes to inspiration, there's only one name for Michael, and that one is Eddie Murphy.
First stand-up special I ever watched was Eddie Murphy. And I'm on him making a joke about Africa, you know, and that's where I'm from. You know, I was born in West Africa, came to the States, like I said, during my teenage years. So, you know, for a guy to make fun of about my people, you know, I just found it interesting. I started just going and Googling. We didn't have Google back then, but, you know, you'll go to the DVD store back then and ask for movies, ask for anything with Eddie Murphy in it. And they started, you know, and I started to watching Eddie, you know, and then, of course, Saturday Night Live and the Beverly Hills Cops 1, 2, and 3, and I just thought he was just the funniest guy in the world, you know, and he pretty much inspired me to go on stage and just, you know, you can just do anything and say whatever you want to say, you know, and he definitely gave me that feeling of just being yourself, you know, of not caring what people think and just saying anything. I think that's what America like. America like those who are not afraid to speak their mind, you know. And I got that part of my stand-up. I got that, you know, from Eddie, of course. You know, because I kind of missed the Richard Pryor era when I came to America. Richard Pryor wasn't doing as much stand-up back then, if any at all. He was pretty much a movie star at that point. You know, but right. As far as the stand-up, man, Eddie pretty much took over from Richard Pryor and just, you know, he became my guy.
At one particular point in his career, Michael decided to stop telling jokes and to talk about his background, especially his African heritage. I asked him how that all came about.
It took about 3 years, and I think that's that turning point in a comedian's life. It takes a couple of years for you to really know about what you want to talk about. You know, the first time I went on stage, you know, I pretty much, you know, just made fun of myself, you know, because I'm really slim. I go on stage and I just open my arms and I said something like, Slim Fast really was, look at me. You know, I just pretty much make fun of my media self, you know. And then it wasn't really going anywhere, you know. And then I was like, I didn't, you know, and 3 years later, for some reason, I was doing a show once. And I not only that, I would also go on stage and just talk like I talk now. And then 3 years later, I'm going on stage, and then I just started to try some new stuff. And I imitated like an uncle of mine in Africa, and then I brought out his accent, you know. So, and every joke I said with the accent was hilarious. Even if they just loved the accent. So I'm like, you know, let me actually bring that to the light. Let me actually just. And like, I just came from Africa today. Let me bring the accent out completely throughout my whole act. And then put on the African garb, you know? So, to spell it, let me put the clothes on. And that's what I did. I threw on my African dashiki, and I went on stage with my accent from there on. And everything I said was funny. So I did that for, like, the next 15 years, you know? And that's what took me to the next level. That's how I got a cameo in the movie Next Friday. And I got to, you know, do the Def Comedy Jam, the BET Comedy Views, and all those different stand-up shows that there were back then, you know, in the early 2000s. And in the late 90s.
His latest project is Tooken. It's a satire of the Liam Neeson Taken films, and Michael's role in there, well, he explains it better this way.
You know, you do these movies, and a lot of times, you know, it goes way back to the early 90s, where they always get comedians to do, like, a funny cameo in the movie. And I'm the comedian that does the funny cameo in this movie. You know, this movie is completely funny. It didn't need me, you know, but, you know, it was always great to have a comedian just come up there and do something crazy. You know, if you go back to, like, Chris Rock and, like, I'm Gonna Get You Sucker. I even did a cameo in another movie called Next Friday that came out, like, 2000 with Ice Cube and Mike Adams. So, you know, I actually did a cameo in this movie where I impersonated Akon. This movie is called Tooken. It's pretty much a spoof of the movie Taken. You know, if you love the movie Taken and you love comedy, you'll definitely enjoy this movie. I did a cameo where I think the daughter, dad, and her stepdad, who is a black guy, because I guess in this movie, the mother started dating a black guy. So these two guys are pretty much in competition to, you know, to see who pleased the daughter the best. And at her 16th birthday party, you know, the dad, you know, rips out a birthday card and said, "Hey, little sweet, I bought you a birthday card." And you open up the birthday card, it has music in it. So now the black stepdad is in competition. So he's like, "Well, sweetheart, I wasn't able to get you a card, but I got you a real singer to sing you a birthday song. Give it up for Akon." And then I come out. So I'm impersonating Akon, and I'm singing, I'm acting all crazy, I'm throwing my face. I don't want to give away the movie because I want everybody to go see it. And, you know, and that's pretty much what happened in this, you know, that this movie is the thing that is not about me. It's about a great, funny movie that is probably the greatest spoof of all spoofs. You know, and you're going to enjoy it. So I definitely recommend every fan of mine or anybody that likes comedy and have seen the movie Taken to go and watch this, to enjoy this. It's a whole different level of comedy.
Catch up on Michael right now at michaelblackson.com. And Tooken is on video on demand and hits DVD shelves in July. That's it for the podcast, but we're back on schedule next week. And when we're here, we're going to talk about Unreal, the new Lifetime series that kind of gives you a different perspective on what reality TV is all about. Find that and more on websites like CopyMix.com, MichaelDavisWorld.com, GetThePointRadio.com, and in the iTunes podcast directory as well. On Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, you'll find us under The Point Radio, and you'll find us right back here, too, in just a few days. Get the-